Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. They're often called helicopter parents, bulldozer parents, tiger moms, or hothouse parents. While aimed at getting their children the best opportunities in life, often this overparenting can backfire, leaving their children unable to cope with peer conflicts, low self-esteem, anxiety, sense of entitlement, or more. My guest today has over 40 years of psychiatric practice experience and has witnessed a steady increase in overparenting and offers his advice and practical information in his new book, The Overparenting Epidemic, Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You Too. The book offers parents a few diagnostic quizzes as well as stories on the appropriate parental responses to your child's setbacks, conflicts with peers and teachers, and interest in activities. Dr. George Glass is an associate professor of psychiatry at the Baylor College of Medicine and the University of Texas Medical School. He and co-author David Tabatsky are also the authors of Blending Families Successfully. He joins us today by phone from Houston. Dr. Glass, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Your new book, The Overparenting Epidemic, describes some of the symptoms and ways parents today get overly involved in their children's lives. Now, I would just ask you, you've been practicing for over 30 years. How frequently do you run into overparenting today as opposed to the early days of your practice?
I think overparenting today is a much more ongoing problem than it was actually 40 years ago when I started my practice. Part of what led to the overparenting book is that I'd written a book about blending families, which also came out about this time. And so we have kids that are range in age 43 to 27. And then I have grandkids. So I've seen essentially three or four eras of child raising on top of my own experience in the 50s and 60s and stories my parents had in the 20s and 30s. So, you know, today it's very different. And what I see is there's a lot of pressure on parents to feel like they have to be successful. You know, job market's limited. Jobs are going overseas. If their kid doesn't make it, they're going to be lost. That's one aspect of it. The second aspect of it is that kids are there's a lot more peer pressure. So that, when I grew up, there wasn't Little League or Pony League, or there was very little. And so you get on your bike on a Saturday morning and you drive to the field, to the closest park, and you'd have pickup games of football and baseball. And you'd never see an adult. Today, everything is so overscheduled that, you know, kids go from baseball practice to tennis practice to ballet practice to music lessons to tutoring, all with the idea that they can't fall behind. If they fall behind, even in preschool, they won't get into the right high school, you know, the middle school. And so, you know, it's a big concern. I think that's another major issue besides the sense that, you know, jobs are going overseas, the economy's tight. And I think the third thing is because of the fact that a lot of women have become better educated and successful in careers, you know, they suddenly decide it's time to have a child. And at that point, you know, having spent 60 or 80 hours as a corporate attorney or in a corporate job, they quit to raise their children. And when that happens, they put 60 or 80 hours into raising their child instead of doing, you know, something else. So the kids become their job, which again leads to the overparenting.
You outline the sort of the history of ancient civilization sort of going forward, a brief history of how parenting has evolved. And of course, you know, the way kids are raised today has only been around for about 100 years. I mean,
sure.
Before that, kids were pretty much considered a product, a field hand, somebody who was going to add to the financial stability of
yes.
the family. The idea of a carefree childhood is a 20th century invention for the most part. Do you think that overparenting is sort of a generational creep, or is it something different today?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think it's a generational creep. But, you know, again, 100 years ago, the more children you had, the more successful you were because you had more people to work on the farm or to help out bringing money into the family. Now, you know, family sizes are limited, and there's a sense that you only have one or two children, and you have to get it right. You know, you can't make a mistake with this one or two children. And so I think generational gap. I think it's a combination of factors. And there's a lot of social pressure from other parents. If your friend or your child's parent's friend say, hey, you know, haven't you signed up for Cub Scouts, Little League, soccer, music lessons, you feel like, you know, I did something wrong. I mean, there's a sense of guilt that you need to get them more involved. And so people go do things, and all of a sudden you have kids who, you know, part of overparenting is overscheduling, so that children never have time just to sit and reflect and play around and just have downtime. And the other part of overparenting is that because you're concerned that kids are not going to get a fair shot if they fail at something, there's a desire not to let them make a mistake. We all make mistakes. I mean, that's part of life. The issue is not making mistakes. The issue is what do you learn from your mistake? Can you take something away from it so that it's a positive experience rather than, oh, my God, it's the end of the world? You know, oh, my God, it's the end of the world is the first reaction, but after that you pick up and say, well, you know, what did I learn? What can I do differently next time? And that's where this comes in, I think.
And earlier you referred to the economic upheavals, the effects of globalization, and there's a perception that the next generation won't be as easy as the last at finding a way in the world of making a living, of living, standard of living as good as the parents' standard of living. How much does this contribute to it, do you think?
Well, I think it contributes a lot. I mean, we all want our children to do better than we did. That's been so for eons. And all of a sudden, there's a sense that life is different, that you're not going to have, your kids are not going to have those opportunities. So what can you as a parent do to give them a leg up? And the leg up starts with if you can get them into the right preschool. The right preschool feeds, you know, to the right lower school. And they're even, you know, we've talked to people who have been the head, you know, the head of preschools. And they talk about, you know, premier preschools, there's a sense that if your child isn't born, if they're not born if they're not set to go to school in September, which means they have to be born earlier at the age of 3 or 4, they're not going to get in. By the time they're, you know, if their birth is in January, they're already teenagers in that school's view. Mm-hmm. And if they're too old, there's not a place for them.
Right.
So there's that pressure all the way up. There's the pressure of, you know, who do you know to help your child get into the right high school or the right college, or if you help your child, you know, with his homework. You know, there's a difference between doing it and helping them when they get stuck. And yet, you know, we hear stories from college guidance counselors and school teachers and heads of school that parents will write kids' papers and come in and complain when they don't get a good mark.
Let me stop you for a second, because earlier you were talking about this whole idea of getting on the you know, the premier preschool leads to the premier elementary school, but what we don't hear a lot of talk about is parents helping their children develop the skills that supposedly these premier institutions are going to instill, and that hopefully it would involve independence, it would involve imaginative play, it would you know, all the things that we know help social development. How come there's not so much discussion on parents helping their children develop these sort of skills that a lot of times these little premier institutions will talk about a lot?
Again, we touch on that in the book, where in the premier institutions, people pay, you know, extra money, or they work to get a scholarship to get their child into the right place. And at that point, they believe that it's done. They did the right thing. Their kid's in the right school, and they're going to be successful. And that's all that matters. So the next step is, having done that, the school should take over. So the school's the one that should teach them values, teach them, you know, how to study, teach them what's important. And you know, partly it's because, you know, sometimes there are two career families where the parents are very busy working, so they're making money, and they don't have time to spend with the kids. And at other times, having decided that the child's in the right school and they should take care of things, when the school doesn't do it, they get upset. Or conversely, again, we hear stories where parents say, you know, I paid a lot of money for my kid to go there. I expect you to do this, this, and this. And interestingly, they don't teach the kids how to deal with it. You know, if a child has a problem with a teacher, which happens all the time, what a parent should teach the child to do is how to negotiate the problem, go in and talk to the teacher. You know, we hear stories about, you know, before the child even gets to do it, you know, they're texting their mom or dad at home about what happened. And, you know, of course, what happened is their view, which is the teacher's wrong, is picking on them or not fair. And the parent, instead of, you know, sitting down with the child and talking about what happened and trying to help them work it out, you know, immediately calls up the teacher and says, why are you picking on Johnny, or why aren't you giving him a chance? Or they even call the head of school. You know, they don't want to waste their time with the teacher because, you know, they're a board member, they've contributed money or some other reason, and therefore the school should give them special attention.
And that's one of the things your book points out, the idea that you can overparent and underparent at the same time, which is overparenting to get your child into a particular situation like a great school or maybe a boarding school or magnet school of some sort, and then you sort of leave the parenting to the school.
You expect that they should do it. You know, they're in a good school, and the school should take care of everything. And then you call up and complain when it doesn't happen, or they call up and complain. And what happens in that process is, number one, the parents don't have a life because they're busy managing their child all the time. And number two, which is even worse, the children feel like there's something the matter with them. They're defective because somebody has to intervene or somebody has to help them out. Or, you know, they go to school and they see the kid whose father did the science project. You know, in seventh grade, I remember a kid came, you know, one of my children was in a science project. And, you know, one of the kids in the project had made a rocket engine. Well, you know, it was clear that the dad was an engineer and the kid was clueless about any of that stuff. You know, and all the other kids had, you know, it was a joke, but it also, and it undermined everybody else because they thought, why should I bother? I mean, you know, if they're going to pick this project and they don't realize the parents did it, but also sabotages the kid who feels like, you know, anything I do isn't going to be good enough. I need mom or dad to do it or help me out.
My guest today is Dr. George Glass. He is a medical doctor and psychiatrist. He serves on the staffs of Baylor College of Medicine, University of Texas Medical School, and Cornell Vile School of Medicine in Houston. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. He's the author of The Overparenting Epidemic, Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You Too. In the book, you have a couple of quizzes to sort of quiz parents on their level of parenting. And you also describe a number of archetypes. Tell us about some of the archetypes of overparenting.
The archetypes are really variations on the ways parents cannot stay out. I mean, the term helicopter parent is also somebody called snowplow parents up in the Northeast, or bulldozer parents, or things like that. But basically, you know, they're the parents who want to be their child's pal. So they never want to discipline or have the child angry at them because they feel like if the child's angry at them, that they're missing something, and the relationship is bad. You know, part of being a parent is you have to make decisions at times or point out to your child decisions that they may not like, you know, for their safety or because which are the primary ones. But, you know, if you tell your kid, you know, they can get a motorcycle when they're a teenager, you know, it's dangerous. And something bad could happen to them. So, you know, you have to, you know, for the desire to be a friend, you really jeopardize their safety. And they don't get parenting, which is parenting is making decisions that are in the best interest of the child, not in your best interest. And your best interest may be to have them as a friend, you know, and we see that a lot in situations where there's a divorced parent. And as I said earlier, because, you know, you got another book that just came out about divorce. You know, when you're a single parent, and, you know, and I was from when my child was 8 and my ex-wife moved, you know, to out of state till when he was 18 and he went to college, I'd go every month to see him and spend a long weekend. And I would try to package as much parenting as I could into 2.5 days. And, of course, during that time, you know, I didn't want to criticize him or punish him because I wanted him to, you know, want to see me the next time. It's a natural kind of feeling or response. And yet, you know, I'm not sure that I always did him a favor. So parents, that's one aspect, parents who want to be a pal.
That's another, you call it buddies. Yeah, buddies.
Buddies, you know. Mm-hmm. Another kind of, you know, the kind of summer is another parent is a parent who doesn't ever want their child to get hurt because they feel like, you know, childhood is precious and life is tough and you're going to get hurt a lot in adulthood anyway. So try to keep your child from getting hurt. And they do that in a bunch of different ways, from, you know, calling up the teacher to make sure something doesn't happen to, you know, not letting him go out on trips and, you know, on stuff with friends, to checking on their cell phone every half an hour to make sure that they're okay, to calling, you know, just calling a parent's kid goes to a friend's house overnight or for a few hours, and the parent calls up to check and make sure everything's okay.
Sort of intervening in peer relationships. In a conflict of some sort, whether it's verbal or physical.
Or just checking. I mean, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. We were talking about this the other day. He said, you know, when he was a kid, like when I was a kid, you know, after school, you go, you know, you drop your books off and you go somewhere. Or Saturday, you'd go out and you'd come home for dinner. And, you know, maybe you'd call and say, hey, I'm going to stay at somebody's house for dinner. But, you know, your parents didn't check on where you were, what happened, were you having a good time, did you get hurt? Did you fall out of a tree? You know, it was, you were on your own, and you learned. You know, I was talking to somebody, they said, you know, once I jumped out of off a 15-foot fence. Well, you know, I didn't break anything, but I learned I don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah, that was probably not the smartest thing. Yeah, exactly.
No, but that's how you learn. You know, if your parents never let you learn those things, then you end up either not becoming an adventurous person, or you become somebody who is always fearful, because if you have a parent who's always checking on you, it makes you think the world is even scarier than it is.
Now you refer to those types as guardian angels. There's other types, the type A's. So that's just the people who overschedule. So it's, you know, Monday's ballet, Tuesday's you know, soccer practice, Wednesday's piano lessons, Thursday's, you know, gymnastics, and so on and so forth. Then there's other ones you call accessories, in which the parent is an accessory to the child, which is really sort of interesting. I want to focus on something you were talking just a moment ago about, and that is this idea that the idea of free time, of kids finding their own way through their own peer groups socially in non-structured activities, from playing sandlot baseball as opposed to Little League, to just going out and taking a stick outside and, you know, having a game of make-believe or play. And I think today there's such a perception of fear that the world is a dangerous place and anything outside of the backyard is a fearful place for parents and their children. How do you get over that? You relate the story of Lenore Skenazy, who's a op-ed columnist who let her 9-year-old take the New York subway when she was when the child was 9. He wanted to do it. It was something he wanted to do. He wanted to try to get back home from wherever they went. And so she let him do it. And, of course, he did it just fine. And she wrote about it. And there was a huge uproar of people saying, you know, basically she was a bad parent for taking such a risk with her child. And as you just mentioned, it says, you know, this was a generation ago. This was pretty standard operating procedure.
And, you know, again, the media looks for, in this era, more on what sells or, you know, horrible stories.
Yeah, what so, news, is, if it bleeds, it leads, right, yeah, in the news.
And the other part is, you know, I'm sure that terrible things happen, as I used to joke with my kids in the olden days, but, you know, you didn't hear about them as much. And that was okay. Kids have to learn, and I think you have to be comfortable with who you are and what you think is right for your child. And you know, like the woman you just described, you know, not to be intimidated because people say, how could you not sign your daughter up for ballet lessons? I mean, some kids don't like ballet lessons. And what's the point of overscheduling? If you think back about a lot of very creative people, you know, from Steve Jobs to writers, a lot of them had had not always happy childhoods, and had a lot of downtime where they got to just think and reflect and create, and they weren't scheduled, they weren't planned. And if you're so busy scheduled and planning, on the one hand, it provides a lot of opportunities for a child, but on the other hand, they never have time to just think about what do they want or what are they interested in. And that plays out when they get to high school. And some of the counselors talk about, they say to a child, where do you want to go to college? And the child says, my mother thinks I should go to da-da-da-da-da. clueless, basically, about anything. Well, why do you want to go there? Well, my mother thinks it's a good place for me, without any concept of, their academic performance, what we like to talk about is fit. How well will the college fit the child? So, again, not letting a child make the decision. And a generation ago, 30, 40 years ago, the concept was, if you go to college, you bump your salary or your long-term life income dramatically. Everybody agrees to that. And that's why there was a push to college. But there wasn't a U.S. News and World Report
ranking system, right?
Yeah, that you have to go to the right college, or it's not going to happen. And so, that's really what's happened now. It's not just the number of very successful people who started in community college, or the number of very successful people who started in the military and decided, hey, I need an education to get past what I'm doing now. It's a big thing, and yet that gets ignored because of the idea that, I have to have a leg up to make it happen. And because I'm a parent and I have the resources or the contacts or all the above, I can make it happen. And yet, usually or often, it leaves the child feeling like they couldn't have done it on their own. And it's sad because a lot of times they can. I mean, I have a story that's not in the book about a friend of one of my kids who was a good football player. And he was a reasonably bright kid, but he was a good football player. And because of that, he got into one of the Ivies as a football player. But he always felt like he wasn't good enough or smart enough, and the parents pushed him to do that rather than going where he wanted to go. And he ended up flunking out, and has a terrible self-image since that time about himself and how, he's not quite right. And he's not quite right because he felt like he didn't do it on his own. He did it because somebody pushed him to do something he really didn't deserve.
My guest today is Dr. George Glass, a doctor and psychiatrist and the author of The Overparenting Epidemic, Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You Too. There's a number of quizzes in there to sort of get a sense of your parenting style. But if you find out, you are intervening inappropriately in your child's life, how do you change overparenting habits? And is it difficult for both the child and the parents to get out of that habit?
Well, it's very it's difficult because it gets to be a lifestyle for a parent. They feel like and a lot of the issues are that the parents feel like that it helps them feel needed and important. We all want to feel needed and important, and we all want to feel like we had an impact on our child. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is that the child has gotten used to having somebody tell them what to do. So they come home and they say, what should I do? I can't make a decision. And the parent, instead of saying, what do you think you ought to do, or what are your choices, or what are the pluses and minuses, or what would happen if you do this or that, it's easier just to jump in and say, why don't you do this, or why don't you do that? And so to start to take a step back, and that's kind of what I said earlier about to throw back to, you know, what we talked about in the blended family book, these situations are going to come back. To say to the child, you know, hey, you know, I'm not going to be with you the rest of your life. You know, you're going to go off to college. You'll be in a dorm. You don't want me in the next room, do you? Or living downtown next to you. And, of course, they don't. So why don't you figure it out? What's the worst that's going to happen if you do X, you know, instead of Y or something? Mm-hmm. And let them do it and back out and say, you know, let's give it a try. Let's talk about it in a few days. So that you start to pull yourself out. And in turn, you as the parent pull yourself out. And in turn, you encourage the child to say, hey, you know, it's time to start to think about some of these things. And, you know, what do you think you ought to do? You know, you're 8 years old. Everybody else is trying to decide whether they want to join Scouts or not. What do you think you want to, you know, can you do Scouts and baseball and, you know, all these different things at one time? And the answer is, well, probably not all of them at the same time. So which one is really important to you?
Yeah, taking up, I think one of your prescriptions for healthy parenting is to listen to your child's wishes before sharing yours.
Yeah, you know, again, that's the idea that kids are, I mean, it sounds funny, but the notion that children are independent, functioning beings, they're not an extension of you. And you know, earlier we talked about, you know, accessorizing, and that, you know, is your role that you're your child's, you know, something that you show up for. And look and are proud of, or that you're part of whatever they do. You know, you're the one who goes to all the games. I mean, we hear stories of kids who go on class trips to, you know, overseas or other, anywhere, and the parents have to be on the trip as a chaperone or, you know, overtly to be a chaperone, but in fact, they can't be alone, basically, or can't let their child learn from themselves.
Hmm. Well, we wish you great success. The name of the new book is The Overparenting Epidemic. Dr. Glass, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Dr. George Glass speaking with us here on Studio Tulsi. He's an associate professor of psychiatry at the Baylor College of Medicine and the University of Texas Medical School, and the author of The Overparenting Epidemic, Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You, Too. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.